This episode of the Potato Field with Spudman is brought to you by the 1-4 Group Incorporated, a leading supplier of innovative dormancy and sprout inhibiting products for the potato storage industry. They are dedicated to the continued development of new and improved post-harvest chemical applications through collaborative efforts with leading university researchers and private industry. Find out more at 1-4group.com. In this episode of The Potato Field, we're joined by Andrew Mickelson of Mickelson Farms in Idaho. Mickelson Farms is one of the largest potato farms in the biggest potato producing state. It was founded in 1988 and has grown to include both commercial and seed acreage, multiple packing houses, and a processing operation. It's family owned and operated, led by a host of members of the Mickelson family, including Mark, Dell, Stephanie, Andrew, Brian, Scott, and Brent. In this episode, Andrew discusses the 2020 growing season, the labor challenges created by the pandemic, irrigation, and just what makes the soil of southeastern Idaho so good for growing potatoes. We hope you enjoy the episode. Welcome to the Potato Field with Spudman podcast. I'm your host, Zeke Jennings, editor of Spudman Magazine. Joining me today is Andrew Mickelson of Mickelson Farms in southeastern Idaho, a large, very large farming operation there, very well established and very well known throughout the country. Andrew, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me.
We are now recording on October 20th. How did harvest go? Are you guys wrapped up?
We after last year with all the frost and blizzards, I think everybody focused on getting done a little bit earlier. We still had good weather till now, but we've been finished for a couple weeks now. We closed up everything, got equipment cleaned up, got it put away. So we finished just that first, just a little bit into October.
Yep. And you guys were able to avoid the late frost that you dealt with last year too, the June cold.
Yeah. So last year it was just frost after frost after frost. I mean, we saw plants that were frozen down to the ground time and time again, and somehow miraculously they still produce something, but it was rough last year. This year we were pretty good. No major frost throughout the year. The biggest frost we had was there was one in September, early September, that just kind of finished out the crop. It kind of killed off everything. So if you weren't already killing your spuds, they got killed off for you.
Could you break down a little bit your operation? Because it's, you know, you've got a lot of different things that you guys do at Mickelson Farms besides just growing spuds. Could you just give us a brief overview of the operation?
Yeah, Mickelson Farms is a family-owned business. We've been that way. We were started in 1988 in its current format, and we just continue to go from there, believing in vertical integration. At this point, we have a seed operation, Yellowstone Seed, where we grow our potatoes before we grow them commercially. Then we also have two packing plants under the Rigby Produce label, and we also have a processing plant, Potato Products of Idaho, that processes as well.
So your title is basically farm manager. What does being farm manager of such a large operation entail? What do your days and weeks typically look like?
You know, we're not too particular on titles at our operation. You know, we just got to get the job done. We've got to do the work that we've got to do. So for me, a lot of what it is watching that day-to-day operation of the crop, HR, financials, all that sort of stuff. We're kind of in and out on just doing everything that it takes to run it. While I have one area that I focus on, I also do work with the other areas. We believe that the entire operation works as one. You have to be integrated with the other farms. If one farm's not done, we're getting there with the other part of the farm. If the warehouse needs help, we're there at the warehouse. If the seed needs help, we're there at the seed. And so a lot of it's just focusing on making sure that we're getting done everywhere.
Now, what are your other family members that are involved?
So we have two different sides of the family here that's involved. I've got a brother, Samuel Mickelson, and my father, Mark Mickelson. We primarily work on the growing side. That's our focus. That's our emphasis. And then we also have the other side of the family that runs our packing plant and our processing plant, which includes Del Mickelson and his sons, Brian, Scott, and Brent Mickelson.
Okay. So now, did your dad, Mark, actually start the farm back in 88, or was it other family? Okay.
Back in 1988, it started with my dad, his father, and his uncle, Dell, which is still a partner in the business now.
Okay. And did you guys, were you based in the family based in Idaho always? Was there any kind of other agricultural background there?
You know, we've been in Idaho for forever. You know, it gets blurry when you start going back that far. But as I look at the family history and stuff, I figure I'm a sixth or seventh generation Idaho potato farmer. So we've been here for a long time. We've been growing potatoes for a long time, and hopefully we'll continue to grow potatoes for a really long time.
Now, southeastern Idaho might be the most well-known potato growing region, possibly in the world. I'd like to ask this question of guys in your neck of the woods. What is it about the soil there that is so beneficial for potatoes?
Well, you know, I think there's a couple things, but I think primarily it's that volcanic material that's here. We were in this Yellowstone caldera. It's pretty flat, relatively, and it's got all that volcanic material in there that's helped make some great soil, although it does vary a lot. We have some pretty light dirt that when it's dry, it looks about like powder. We have pretty sandy soils. And they each have their own difficulties and troubles that we have to deal with, but they all can grow a great high quality potato when we take care of them.
And you mentioned already how many different things you guys are doing with, you do table stock, food service, processing, seed. How many varieties did you grow this year?
This year we really just had russet Burbanks, russet North Dakotas, and some red potatoes that we do some processing with as well. So that's our real focus. We've been a fresh grower, and that's what we've put our primary focus in. And so the majority of our crop each and every year is for that fresh market. And that's why we go with the russet Burbank or russet North Dakota. We personally like the russet North Dakotas a little bit better. We feel like they deliver a little better product for the customer.
Have you guys experimented with any other varieties over the years to come back to those old staples?
You know, we played around with some different varieties, but when it comes to fresh, there's really not a whole lot of variance there. It's pretty much a russet Burbank or a North Dakota. And yeah, we've gone through different varieties of North Dakotas, but we've kind of happy with where we're at. We're growing a lot of 278s, 296s, and 3s. They seem to work really well for us. But yeah, it just hasn't changed a lot. The customer wants what the customer wants.
Now, water is a big concern for a lot of growers around the country, and I know it does come up from time to time in Idaho. How's the water situation with your farm, and what do you guys do as far as irrigation? You know, are you using pivots? What could you share about that?
So yeah, up in our area, there's a lot of pivots. Hand lines have pretty much become non-existent. Wheel lines do not have a lot of traction up here either. We have a lot of wide open space, so pivots have worked really well. I mean, up in our area, we have a pretty good mixture between ground and surface water. Our farm, we have a pretty good split of that between both, and they both work well, but we use pivots for pretty much everything. One of the things, though, that we've really focused on when it comes to water is we have done monitoring on our pivots. All of our large pivots have a pivot track monitoring system is what it's called. It's pretty much makes them smart pivot. Each week we get reports. We know whether they're on or off, and it's really helped us. We've been able to take those reports. Each and every week we analyze those. We compare them to ET. We can make sure we're not overwatering, underwatering. And in some instances, we've been able to reduce water usage by 25% plus, especially on the sandy soils. You never think they're wet. And so you just keep pouring water on, but you start to learn your way over what they need, and you start leaching the nutrients out. So we've really watched that. We feel like we've been able to keep a lot of those nutrients in the soil instead of throwing them out. And we've also been able to save water.
Oh, that's great. And another thing that is always a big, especially, I think anyone that in agriculture, I don't care what you grow, labor is a big deal. How big is your year-round staff there? Do you do seasonal work? How do you keep staff to what you need?
You know, that's been one of the most difficult things, especially with this COVID and everything else. At times we peak out during harvest with over 500 employees between our different businesses. And that takes a lot of work. On the farm, we generally try to be between that 50 to 100 full time. But I know this year during harvest, we brought in 100 H2A, and then we had some other help locally. It takes a lot of help. And this year was difficult. We noticed that local help was much harder to come by. People just weren't wanting to come out and work. Luckily, though, with the H2A program, we were able to bring in that help. They show up every day. They're there. They're on time. They're just happy to work. And so luckily, we had that H2A workforce with us this year to bring the crop in.
Well, we're going to take just a quick break here for a message from our sponsor. Do you struggle with black spot or pressure bruise in your potato crop? The team at 1-4 Group has a solution for you. Their biocontrol 1-4 site has proven time and again to be the best sustainable option for delivering high quality potatoes. Incorporate 1-4 site into your existing storage program for unprecedented success. Learn more at 1-4group.com. And now back to the podcast. Did you have any trouble with H2A just getting processing going through? I know that was a concern earlier this year. Were you able to get the guys on the farm that you needed in time that you needed them?
Yeah, no, it seems like they got that worked out by mid-year. So we got them the day we needed them. They were there and ready. We had to do a lot of extra steps, though. We did COVID testing in Mexico. We did more COVID testing when we got up here. We had to break up our housing more so that we could try to mitigate the risk of COVID. As far as we know, we had no COVID cases during harvest, which was a major blessing to us. And so we were able to get through harvest without that, get people sent on their way. And that was the biggest relief, is that COVID didn't end up shutting us down at all or hurting our employees. That's our primary concern, is we don't want anybody to be injured. We wanted them all to go home healthy.
Well, congratulations on that. That sounds like it worked out well. As I mentioned earlier, you guys are very well known and a large farm. You do a great job, you know, with the website and everything. But as far as keeping your farm front of mind for your customers, what do you do as far as marketing and that kind of thing and promotion?
So we've kind of gone our own route this direction. We have our own dedicated sales team that work right out of Rigby and out of our packing plant. And they've developed some great relationships with people and with our customers. But the biggest focus we've always had from the very beginning is quality. We want to have quality product potatoes for our customers consistently all the time. And what we've learned is we've provided those consistent products each and every time. They keep coming back. Sometimes with these big food service companies, they kind of shift your area, send you to other areas. And a lot of times when we've done that, the customers from the areas where we got shifted out of, they said, hey, we want those potatoes again. We want that product again because it's consistent and it's high quality. And so for us, that's been our major marketing point, is high quality potatoes.
And from a larger aspect, there was a lot of talk earlier this year as far as COVID that all of a sudden, you know, the processing demand went down and the table stock demand went up because people were suddenly shopping at the store. Did you think that the whole COVID thing has made clear any tweaks the industry needs to do in its supply flexibility or anything like that?
Well, you know, I think we did a really good job. It was difficult. Our food service all of a sudden gone, nothing, pretty much almost overnight. And So a lot of sheds, we have this ability that as demands change, we do. We put more in bags, send them to the grocery stores. It's been difficult, though, to be completely honest. It's been really hard making that shift. We went into last fall. This is going to be a runaway year, a great year for potato growers. We're going to make a lot of money. And then COVID came. And it really messed everything up. It dropped prices. Demand overall was still down. Because I think consumers still have a hard time cooking and figuring out how to use their potatoes. But we're slowly coming back. We're starting to get that food service again a little bit. Still probably a little bit more of that consumer demand, but we're hoping here that in the coming months, we can see that the COVID slow down a little bit and restaurants start to open up a little bit more so we can get our food service business going again.
Yeah, I remember talking to Blair at Potatoes USA, and you know, he would mention that one thing about COVID is a lot of people are cooking potatoes for the first time in their home. They'd never done it, which I don't know. You think about it, and that's so foreign to me. You know, I've been having potatoes cooked in the home my entire life, but I mean, there's a different generation out there that's just really used to eating out, and it's not that they don't eat potatoes; they just have somebody else cook them for them. So who knows? Maybe we'll have a better educated consumer now.
You know, I hope so. You know, the one thing that does hurt us though is waste, and restaurants tend to waste a little bit more than the consumer at home. And so I think overall, that's where we've seen some of our demand drop off is that way. But no, I hope that consumers do start to do that more. I noticed that I started cooking more potatoes at home, and I've had a lot of fun with the recipes, coming up with new and different ideas on how to use it. My favorite right now is a smoked baked potato. I get it out on my smoker, do it there for a couple hours, cover it with some butter and some kosher salt, and man, it makes a great baked potato. And so I've had an opportunity during it too to be able to find new ways to use my potatoes and have a great meal.
Tell me more about that smoke. Are you cooking it just right on the smoker? No tinfoil, anything?
No tinfoil, nothing. Just wash them off, put them on there, dry them out a little bit and add the butter and salt. And it just makes a great potato. I've never been a fan of the potato skins before, but I've started doing it that way. And now potato skins are actually my favorite part of the whole potato. Eating those potato skins with that nice flavoring.
You know, I found out during this pandemic that I've been cooking baked potatoes all wrong my entire life. I've been wrapping them in tinfoil, and that steams them. So I don't remember where I came across it, but it was this, you know, little potato hack of cooking it, no tinfoil, right in the oven. You puncture it about halfway through and then put some tinfoil underneath to catch any moisture. But man, it's such a better potato that way. It really brings out the flavor in that skin, just like you were mentioning. So I won't have it any other way now.
You know, and I think that's great. You know, there's also the chance of botulism and some of those other things when you use the tinfoil. And once you get rid of that tinfoil and just cook it, you can eliminate some of those other problems as well. So I hope everyone will try to perfect that baked potato recipe, whether it's, you know, cook it fast, cook it slow, cook it in the oven some, put it in the microwave to finish it off. There's a lot of different ways, and you can figure out how to make a great baked potato in a decent amount of time for your meals.
Well, we've covered quite a bit. We've learned a lot about your farm and what makes it successful. Is there anything else that is going on in your world that you'd like to talk about?
You know, I think the biggest thing for us is it is difficult. We keep seeing more and more small growers keep dropping out. I think it's just, we have to keep being efficient. You have to figure out how to be that least cost producer and still provide a quality product. And that will always be our focus, is always being able to make a quality product at the right price for consumers. I think that's probably the biggest thing that potato farmers as a whole, we just got to keep working that way. We have to not grow more potatoes. We always have that temptation to always do a couple more acres. And we've always, as we've done our expansions in the past, we've always tried to keep it so that we're actually not upping acres of potatoes. We're actually maybe reducing just as we expand, you know, more acres overall, but ground that was doing a lot more potatoes, we're trying to cut that back. And we're always happy to see that.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm going to be starting a week or work on a new story just on that, the 2020 supply. And, you know, I read North American Potato Market News with that Bruce Huffaker does, and he does a fantastic job just on the numbers side. And, you know, we're kind of debating now. It's like, did we underplant? Is there not going to be enough? Are we going to be able to make demand? But I'm sure from your guys' point of view, being a little short wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. Might fetch you a better price.
You know, I always like to see that supply a little bit low. Demand doesn't change for potatoes, so it's all about the supply. Mm-hmm. That one extra potato can make a huge difference. But I think this year's going to be okay. I think processors learned that they gave away too much too early. I think they're going to come back and have to take a little bit more. Mm-hmm. You know, yields are higher in some places, but it looks like yields overall are probably down. Processors came in and they wanted early digs, that cut into the yield. There was a lot of that going on. And so I think we're going to see this year that the supply is not going to be as plentiful as we thought it was going to be. I think the size is going to be down just a little bit too. So overall, I'm optimistic. Once we make it through harvest and we don't see a complete drop off, we're always happy, but it'll take a month or two here to get a better idea of where the market's going to stabilize at for this year.
Absolutely. Well, Andrew, it's been a lot of fun. You were great, very insightful, and we're very thankful for your time. And congratulations on a successful harvest, and I hope you have a great winter season and a very lucrative one too.
I hope so as well. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody, and thanks again to 1-4 Group, our sponsor. Be sure to go check them out at 1-4group.com. We'll see you next time.